I believe that Mr. Schubert didn't finish his last symphony, but it's a great masterpiece, known as the unfinished symphony. Well, this is the unfinished sermon. I doubt whether it will stand alongside Schubert. But in a lot of ways, I was glad and felt a sense of fulfilment when I was suddenly asked to preach late yesterday afternoon, and to speak about Moses. I'm not going to follow the directions given because it's supposed to start at after the deliverance from the Red Sea, and I felt I just can't work around that, so here we are. One reason why I was glad about Moses, about speaking on Moses, it touches some very deep chords in my life in all kinds of ways. Perhaps the most significant is that the very fact that I am preaching today is due in some way to the way that God has used him to challenge and enrich my life. There was one particular incident where we had sayings in our little church group. Well, it wasn't a little one, it was, I guess on today's standards. I'm talking about a little group when one of the churches that I first attended, there were 150 people went to that church. 150! You know, yeah. But Moses' life was described in many ways, in little sort of snippets. Something like, Moses took 40 years to learn that he needed God. The next 40 years, learning what that might be. And the final 40 years, doing what that required. And then along comes this man, Major Eden Thomas. The very fact that he uses the word major doesn't impress me, but he's had a tremendous impact on my life. And he said, that outline is just rubbish. He says, here we have a young man who gets and feels the throb of social passion. Social passion and religious passion in his life. I don't know what sort of religious passion it was. I don't think I would have passed him in a theology exam. But there was a passion, a passion for his people, that despite him living in the palace and his people being the Jews who were under threat of destruction, despite that, he felt this affinity with his own people, and you know the story. But Major Thomas says there he was, gripped with social and religious passion for his God and his people. But where was he 40 years later? He had settled down in the desert, minding his father-in-law's flock. I heard that message 40 years ago, 50 years ago, I think. And I hope I'm not talking about this in a morbid way, but I'm afraid of that verse. I don't want to settle down and burn out. I don't want to be just comfortable, which I guess is a pretty major reason why at 81 I'm given the grace to stand here. Well, I haven't got too far with my... Oh, yeah, we have. I was going to say, I seem to be talking more about me than Moses, but I can't begin without ever... without looking, first of all, at Moses' family. Listen. Exodus chapter 1. The king of Egypt spoke to the midwives and he said, I want you to let all the boys die. And then you know the story, that Moses' parents wouldn't accept that decree, and they outwitted the Pharaoh. Look, I've written the wrong verses down here, and I'm getting in a muddle. So just give me a second, will you please? Yeah, well, I can't find it, but it doesn't really matter. Here we have this loving couple who defied Pharaoh and had, isn't a wonderful irony, had his son in the palace, no less. What was it that prompted? Hey, by the way, what were the names of Moses' parents? That's interesting, isn't it? None of us know. And I didn't until I started to look. Here are two completely, or would have been, completely unknown bits of flotsam and jetsam in the stream of humanity. They were nobody. The world would be vastly, vastly different today had there been no Moses. What was it that prompted this, that produced this? It came out of the faith relationship between their God and themselves. I don't think I will ever make headlines. I've been waiting for 50 years in ministry and I've never been on the front page once. Seems to me you can pretty easily get on the front page of the West Australian today, but... That's beside the point. I'm not a man who will ever know publicity. Neither would they, and probably not many of you. What can I do? What can I do? I'm not anybody. I have few gifts. I'm not really important. Amram and Jochebed were their names. Exodus chapter 6, verse 20. Amram and Jochebed. There, the faith of this simple couple. I love that. And the fact that I brought it up tells me what I'm trying to do this morning. I gave up at about 7 o'clock this morning, trying to prepare a sermon, and then tried to stay awake enough to take a few snapshots. And so that's what I'm doing. So there is Moses out in the desert, settled down. There used to be an old warrior, I could have to call her, who was, I can't even think of the country town now, but for many, many years, she had a very virile and active, compassionate ministry to our indigenous people. And she came to Perth Bible Institute, and she said, it was when she was retiring, about age 70. And a few months later, after this farewell address, I was up at Mount Margaret Mission, and lo and behold, there is Miss Cox, I think it was. I said, what are you doing up here? And she said to me, this 70 odd years, which was pretty old to me then, and she said to me, she said, I couldn't sit down there and do nothing. I want to burn out, not rust out. Well, in chapter 3, Moses, I think, was rusting out. And then it happened. He ran into the constant refrain of his God. And the constant refrain of his God, you read about it everywhere in those early, right through Exodus. But I'm just looking at chapter 3. A constant refrain where God says, I have seen the pain, the injustice towards my people. I have heard their groans. And there is God's response. I will come down and rescue them. Great stuff. But how does he do that? You know, I read that and I think, I thought I was going to have to do something. And I didn't want to. So let's see how God spoke to Moses about it. Chapter 3, Moses was tending the flock of God, the flock of his father-in-law, and he led the flock to the far side of the desert and came to Horeb. And there the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I'll go over and see this strange sight, why the bush doesn't dry up or burn up. And when the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush. And Moses said, here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. And then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses was afraid to look at God. And it was then that God said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people. I have heard them crying out, and I am concerned, compassionate about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians. Again and again, God's coming down means that he wants me to do something, wants you. For many reasons, I didn't like Karl Barth's comment that we are called to be fellow workers with God. There were a lot of reasons for that. But in my later years, I feel quite deeply the wonder of that, that we are called to be fellow workers with God. Karl Barth goes on to talk about ways in which that is done and what many would love to know in their life is that prayer he sees as work, being a fellow worker with God. So certainly this is what it was with Moses. God said, I will come down. But he didn't say that until something happened. He called Moses, Moses. And Moses said, here I am. And then virtually, go away. Don't come any closer. Take off your sandals, for the place you are standing on is holy ground. Moses discovered in his heart a fundamental, I was going to say truth. Yes, it is a fundamental truth, but it's also fundamental reality. What's the difference between truth and reality? I don't think there is. What is that fundamental reality? That I feel touched by the holiness of God. Yet when I draw near, my sinfulness feels I am repelled. It is when a person explores and enters into that I believe she comes to know something fundamental about God in his holiness who attracts us with almighty love. At the same time, we feel unworthy of him. Moses, your people, and I want to send you. Great stuff, isn't it? Why doesn't it happen today like that? You ever thought about that? Look, there it was. I mean, it was just so obvious, just so clear. I've heard how many millions, you could say, would have read that verse at Auschwitz and so on. What did they think? What did they feel when they read that? Why doesn't God work like that today? Any comments? It looks like you've got as many answers to that as I have. Would that make any difference?
It wouldn't make any difference that God would talk to us or not, but maybe the way he actually translates and communicates
it
with us.
Yep.
But maybe through an iPhone?
No. Yep.
I know we're the apple of his eye, but not quite.
Look, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have asked a question. Not only because they're too difficult, but I forgot my hearing aid battery's gone and I can only half hear. So I'd better just, if you have questions, see me afterwards.
Doing the queue.
Yeah. Well, what else can we say about Moses? Gosh, I've hardly said anything. It is impossible to overestimate the significance of the sojourn at Sinai, where they received. And it's usually said where they received the Ten Commandments. Yep, they did. But they received an awful lot more. And some of it might sound pretty awful too. But you listen. Here, there were two points of what a walk with God entails: community and individual. And I suppose most of the history of the church, we've got those things out of balance. We either want fellowship, the community, with not too much individual interference in my life by God, or by God through the church, the community. Or we want just the individual, an individual so vastly different from the meaning of individual in biblical days, but nevertheless, people seem to me to want the individual response from God. What really matters is just God and me. Or as someone cuttingly observed, their Christian life is simply a love affair with Jesus, not the community. We, as Moses was, what does it say in chapter 3, where he joined himself with the people of God? There is nothing there about his individual faith. It is an identification of himself with the community. And that community is based on a covenant. I don't know how all this was done, and I don't think the writer of Exodus quite knew how to explain it either. But somehow, God Almighty entered into an agreement with this group of people and said to them, "This is your destiny." Chapter 19, just a sec. Chapter 19, verse 4. "You've seen what I did to Egypt." I've often wondered what Egyptians, how they respond to that, but that's another story. "You yourselves have seen what I did to Egypt, and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself." Isn't that lovely? "Brought you to myself. Now, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all nations you'll be my treasured possession. Although the whole earth is mine, you, this is your destiny, will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation." These are the words you are to speak to the Israelites. Their destiny is to be a people through whom the whole world comes to know God, and through whom God makes himself known to them. That's their destiny. And all the way through the Old Testament, I feel God's longing for people to fulfill that destiny. And I'm going to speak about that in 2 weeks' time, actually. But it is, as I said, impossible to overestimate the significance of this covenant that they agreed to accept. But of course, as it always seemed to do, they stuffed it all up. And there are a lot of verses. But you know, within two months of leaving Egypt, they were on the borders of the Promised Land. How long did it take them to get there? 40 years. 40 years wandering around in the desert wilderness. And if there's something else that scares me, not just the scare of burning out, but the scare, oh God, the scare of just one, as a walk with God, it's more of wandering around in the wilderness rather than a destiny that sees his fulfillment in many things. God deliver us from just wandering around. And if you want to read a very challenging and very enriching passage, then you read chapter 33. But look, I think I've spoken enough. You probably think I've spoken too much, but let me finish, because one of the things about this Moses is that covenant and that personal. And at the end of chapter 33, where is it? Then Moses said to him, I will go with you. Then the Lord replied and said to Moses, I will go with you, and I'll give you rest. And Moses said to him, if your presence does not go with us, do not send us up from here. I never forget hearing a young man pray that. Oh God, if your presence does not go up with me, don't let me go up here. What else will distinguish me from your people and all the other people on the face of the earth? And the Lord said to Moses, I'll do the very thing you've asked me, because I am pleased with you. I'd love to hear that word. And then Moses said, now, how about that? Now, show me your glory. And the Lord said, I will cause all my goodness to pass in front of you, and I will proclaim the name of the Lord in your presence. I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion. But you cannot see my face, for no one can see me and live. And then the Lord said, there is a place near me where you may stand on a rock. When my glory passes by, I will put you in the cleft of the rock and cover you with my hand until I pass by. But you will not see my face. One more verse that I felt I had to read after that. But that verse is found way over in John. That which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked at and our hands have touched, this we proclaim concerning the word of life. The life appeared, we have seen it and testify to it. And we proclaim to you the eternal life which was with the Father and has appeared to us. Oh God, thank you. And thank you for listening to this disjointed lot of snapshots. Bless you.